Like Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Mitch Teich. In the last few decades, autism rates have skyrocketed in the United States. There are theories as to why, but many point to increased awareness and thus diagnosis as at least partly responsible for the uptick.
40 years ago, the condition was still relatively unknown to the general public, and a diagnosis of autism could mean a lifetime of abuse and discrimination.
So in the mid-70s, a group of parents founded the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin as a support group for people who had children with autism. Since then, the organization has become a support system for both caregivers and those with autism, helping them navigate a sometimes challenging world.
Emily Levine is the executive director of the Autism Society, and she sat down with Lake Effect's Joy Powers to talk about how our cultural understanding of autism has changed since the organization was founded.
The families that were the founders of our organization were pioneers in seeking opportunities for their children. So before the mid-70s, before our group even was formalized, there was a network of parents across Wisconsin who were working to change the laws so that their children could go to school. Because until that time, children were not afforded the same opportunities as their typically developing peers. A lot of children were institutionalized, were sent to Winnebago or other places. And at the time, it was a medical diagnosis that was very dire, that was not given a lot of hope, not given any education or treatment. They were sort of just sent away. And it was completely devastating for families and, of course, horrible for the individuals who were institutionalized without really much thought to what would become of them in the future. So the families that worked to get their kids in school, once that goal was accomplished, they banded together and started an autism society. And at the beginning, it was mostly just to support each other. And then as the organization grew, we began to do more outreach and try to, you know, provide resources for other families living in the area.
What has changed in our cultural understanding and our scientific understanding about autism since that rather dire time?
So there's two parts to that question. One is the civil rights of people with disabilities in general, who were viewed as less than human, frankly, and not accorded the same opportunities and dignity that other children and that all of us really deserve. So there were a number of individuals that worked on rights for the disabled, and that kind of started in the physical disabilities realm with things like curb cuts for wheelchairs. And that was kind of the thin edge of the wedge, getting in and letting people realize that people with disabilities had abilities as well as disabilities and needed to be seen as whole human beings and not as less than human because they had a disability. So that was one part of it. The other part of it is that brain research has really, really improved greatly. For a long time, people thought that if an individual couldn't speak, that they weren't thinking or that they were intellectually impaired in some way. And we know that that's not true. We know that a lot of our folks who have less verbal language still are very capable and can, you know, have thoughts and feelings just like everybody else, and they need and deserve to be treated like everybody else. So there are a lot of breakthroughs that have happened in the last 30 years around treatment, around how we view people. Some people used to say the term suffering from autism, and we don't like to use that term anymore. I'm a parent also of an adult with autism, and what I saw a lot of was that we were suffering from discrimination. We were not necessarily, I mean, the autism had its own set of challenges, but the things that were the most intensely painful for me and for my son were the shunning and rejection and the lack of understanding. And so we still do awareness campaigns. I know awareness campaigns are somewhat out of vogue, but I really think that there still are a lot of people who do not understand what autism is, so they're not as willing to make accommodations or make allowances for people that sometimes have behaviors that are not entirely in their control.
As you said, we've come a long way in the last 30 years, but there are still these misconceptions that persist. What are the kinds of things that you run into on a daily basis, kind of misperceptions of what autism really means?
One of the things we see is that behaviors are misinterpreted. that anybody who does something unusual or moves in an unusual way or responds in a way that is not expected, if you do something that's unexpected, that people will reject you or will worry about you just because it's not typical. It's not what they're expecting. And what we've seen over time as people have become more exposed to people with autism is that if you can understand where the behavior is coming from or what is going on with that person, you can, you know, provide an accommodation to either redirect the behavior or make the behavior go away. Sometimes it's a matter of understanding that the person is uncomfortable in some way. There might be a sensory challenge that they're experiencing right then that is making the world difficult for them, or they can't communicate what they need to feel safe. So they might, you know, run or do something else because they don't feel safe. So a lot of it is trying to understand the underlying reasons for behavior. And that whole philosophy is starting to get into education. We have trainings regularly on, you know, dealing with what typical people consider challenging behavior. And a lot of times people will say, I don't care why, I just want it to stop. Like, can you make him stop hitting or can you make him stop running? And the thing is that unless you understand the underlying cause of the behavior and the need that the person is trying to meet, you aren't going to be successful in modifying that behavior. So we have to kind of put on our detective hats and figure out, especially if the person can't tell us themselves why they're doing something, we have to observe and figure out what's going on and what kinds of accommodations we could make, you know, and start really basically, like, are they hungry? Are they thirsty? Do they need to use the bathroom? Are they feeling unwelcome? Are they too hot? What's going on? And there could be a lot of things. It can be complicated.
You know, one of the misperceptions that I think a lot of us have is that immediately when a parent or a caregiver has a child with autism, that suddenly they're an authority on it, that suddenly they know everything that's going on. But as you mentioned, often parents will be saying, well, how do I just stop this behavior? What kind of supports do you offer to parents and caregivers who often don't really know how to handle this situation?
Well, the first thing is we have a phone line. We have a helpline. And a lot of times we will just help people over the phone. And then we have a new parent kit that we will mail you. We have orientation for parents who are new to autism. And then in addition to that, we have support groups where people can connect with other parents. And another thing we do is have monthly social events. We just had one at Cool Waters where we rented out the whole Cool Waters for a Friday evening just for our families. And we had a couple hundred people there, which in the water park is not very many people. But places like that can be kind of overwhelming for people with autism when they're full of people yelling and splashing. So we try to have a lot of opportunities for parents to connect, to see other parents, how they model parenting, and we model acceptance, and we model strategies that we hope will help people. And just having people talk to each other, because a lot of us, when we have a child that isn't developing the way we expected, we don't know what to do. With a typical child, we might turn to our friends or our mom or other family members and say, you know, help me out with this, or what did you do when your child did this? And if our family members or friends don't have a child like our child, they really are not able to help, or even sometimes they're not really able to understand. And a lot of our parents get judged or feel frustrated that nobody understands what they're going through. And that's why we provide all the opportunities for parents to get together and talk and network, share information, talk about, you know, different therapies they've tried or different doctors they've gone to, different school districts even, share their experiences and share what's been helpful and what hasn't been helpful.
Now, you mentioned you have an adult son with autism.
I do.
There are a lot of challenges unique to adults with autism that we don't often talk about. So often we talk about children with autism because we are trying to support parents and we're trying to support the people around them. But what are the challenges unique to autistic adults, and how does your organization help support them?
There is a wide variety of challenges and abilities in autism, and it's referred to as a spectrum disorder. And in the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual, there's three different levels under autism that define the level of support that a person needs. So there are people that are very capable and can work and drive and, you know, graduate university and have jobs and families. And there are other people that need support in every aspect of their lives, that it's not safe for them to live independently. It's not safe for them to cross the street. And so that's a really tough question to answer. But I know that there's been a lot of research done. Paul Shattuck at Drexel University has done some really interesting research on adults with autism. And the things that he's found are very discouraging, that even compared to adults with other disabilities, autistic adults are less likely to be employed 5 years out of high school, are less likely to be living independently. And that is borne out by what I see in my situation and in our organization. We see a lot of adults that are living at home with aging parents. So housing is an issue. Employment is a big issue. Many of our adults, even if they're very capable, are going to need some accommodations in their workplace. And people are not always understanding. We see frequently people can work for years in a job and do okay, and then there's a new boss that comes in or a coworker that was providing support, and it might have even been just emotional support or some kind of help in translating instructions, gets a different assignment, or the person gets a new job and new set of responsibilities, and the transition is too much for them and they lose a job after many years, and it can get very discouraging for them to try again. So a lot of adults are underemployed because of stress and other factors. They may be only able to work part-time and have difficulty supporting themselves.
What kind of supports do you offer autistic adults?
So our primary one is our adult support group. Like I said, we meet twice a month, and it's at our office, and there's an opportunity for people to talk or to play games or to be just to get together and be recognized in a place where they can relax. So one thing we hear frequently from adults with autism is that their welcome is conditional. As long as they can kind of hold things together and act normal, they're welcome. And if they start being stressed and having flapping or having other physical manifestations of their disability, that people no longer want them around. And so it's a lot of effort, a lot of work for them to sometimes hang out with people that are typical peers. And our setting is welcoming no matter what. And then for their parents, we also have a support group for parents of adults with autism where they discuss things like, you know, housing or medication changes or how to help their son or daughter keep a job or find a job. So just because our kids grow up doesn't necessarily mean that they don't need a lot of support in an ongoing way.
Emily Levine is the executive director of the Autism Society of Southeastern Wisconsin, and she spoke with Joy Powers. The Autism Society hosts Dylan's Run, a 2-mile run walk for autism, to the Indian Summer Festival on Sunday, September 10th. You can find more information about all of this at wuwm.com.